This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 129.
But on a 10-year timeline, it's not going to be about individual agents. Right now, what's just emerging is an agent that interacts with you personally, that does your personal tasks. But in 10 years, it's not going to be just one-to-one. It's going to be groups of people and groups of agents swarming together and guiding each other. This connects to what Bob calls shape-shifting organizations. Hierarchy in organizations is going to be very fluid because different kinds of people are going to be able to get the resources and information that they need when they need it through these agentic swarms in order to take on leadership that they couldn't before. Bob, maybe you want to speak more to shape-shifting organizations and how that connects to this.
It essentially means that things are fluid. Hierarchy does not go away. There's still leaders, but they're fluid. They change, and it's kind of who's in the best position to make which decision at what time. And shape-shifting organizations just get much better at doing that. But the wild card here is that now these organizations have non-human participants, including non-human participants in meetings. And that creates this concept of swarms. And the swarm isn't just humans or isn't just agents. It's really blended organizations that include human and non-human participants.
How do we want our leaders, our organizations, and HR to be augmented by AI? Why is generative AI an historic opportunity for HR leaders to shape the future of work and leadership? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you've been following the podcast, then you know that last October, I launched a targeted 3-week virtual development experience for next-gen HR leaders called Elevate. Over 100 next-gen HR leaders participated in Elevate and had the opportunity to learn directly from some of the best minds in our field. In fact, one participant said that Elevate is like a master's degree in HR at a fraction of the cost. If you're serious about becoming a better HR professional, this is a must-attend event. Well, today I am super excited to announce that you can register for Elevate 2025, which will take place over 3 weeks starting on Tuesday, May 20th. And over those 3 weeks, you'll have the opportunity to learn from 18 HR thought leaders during 16 interactive sessions with live Q&As with the goal of helping to take your business acumen, strategic thinking, influence, and coaching capabilities to the next level. So who will you get a chance to learn from and interact with at Elevate 2025? How about Dave Ulrich, talking about the next agenda for human resources, executive coach extraordinaire Marielle Wilkins, talking about unlocking your potential, how to break free from your self-limiting beliefs, Mark Efron, talent philosophy, how to connect your company's values and business strategy, Rena Hellstrom, agile HR expert, will be talking about how do you do agile HR and how you get started, Melissa Daimler, author of Reculturing and a Talent Development and Culture Thought Leader, and even one of our guests today, Jeremy Kirschbaum, will be talking about AI-driven process redesign for HR leaders. Now through March 20th is super early bird pricing, so don't miss out. Go to elevate2025.vip/nextgenHR. That's elevate2025.vip/NextGenHR, or go to futureofhr.com and you can learn more about our 16 interactive sessions, the 18 thought leaders, and why this is the development experience of the year for next gen HR leaders like yourself. And with that, what if I told you that artificial intelligence could actually make us better humans and leaders? That's not a paradox. It's the future that my guests today believe we have the opportunity to create. I'm joined today by three remarkable guests who have co-authored a fascinating book called Leaders Make the Future, 10 New Skills to Humanize Leadership with Generative AI. Now, this is actually the third edition of Leaders Make the Future series, but it has been completely rewritten with the focus on how AI will impact leadership and how we work. And leading the charge is Bob Johansson, a distinguished fellow for the Institute for the Future. And Bob has worked as a professional futurist for nearly 50 years. He has this incredible knack for understanding how technology shapes human behavior and organizations. Bob is the author or co-author of 12 books and a frequent keynote speaker. Joining Bob is Jeremy Kirschbaum, CEO of Handshake, a generative AI consultancy. Jeremy's been working with clients to understand, plan, and implement generative AI projects since 2019, and he's actually the person who introduced Bob to generative AI. Jeremy's also been helping major organizations like Walmart and Deloitte navigate this new technical frontier. And rounding our trio today is Gabe Cervantes, who leads Scalable Foresight at the Institute for the Future. Gabe has an amazing ability to take complex future scenarios and make them actionable for leaders across different industries and regions. I always learn something during my interviews, but today's conversation really got me thinking about the future of leadership and the age of AI. And I'm confident this conversation will get you thinking as well, as we discussed how future-backed thinking helps leaders anticipate and forecast 10-year visions for their organizations, the shift from a VUCA world, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity, to a bonny future, brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and comprehensible, and its implications for leaders, what early aviation's breakthroughs can teach us about managing AI innovation today and tomorrow, the rise of smart mobs and agentic swarms, and how these new team structures will blend AI and human talent at scale, and how HR can shape the AI-enabled workplace that keeps humans at the center, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts this episode as you listen, so drop me a line, say hello. And now let's jump into our conversations with Bob, Jeremy, and Gabe. Hey, Bob, Gabe, Jeremy, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. I'm really excited to have all three of you on the podcast. You guys have written what I guess, Bob, is now the third edition of Leaders Make the Future, and I have read it, and I'm not saying this because you're in front of me on the podcast. It is tremendous. It is one of the best books I have seen on leadership in a long time. And what I love about it is it's future forward looking, but it feels realistic. Like I can see the future the way you guys have described how leaders will start to work with AI. And I just don't get that from a lot of books around this topic. So I really appreciate that. But Bob, let's talk more about it. As you wrote this edition, you use something called the future back thinking approach. Tell us more about this approach and how it helps us forecast the future.
So many people are just caught in the present forward view, and the present right now, the present is so noisy that if you think future back, you get a cleaner view of where things are going. And you can't predict the future. Nobody can predict the future, but you can get a sense of the direction of change. And if you orient yourself toward that direction of change and then think future back, it's just a very fresh, very robust, very flexible starting point for very different kinds of conversation, particularly around innovation.
And when you started to write this book, how far, I guess, future back, where do we start the future from? Are we looking 10 years out, 15 years out? Is it a time frame or is it a vision of what the future could be?
It's about 10 years is the sweet spot. You want to be beyond your normal planning horizon, but close enough in to be credible. Now, in some industries, you need to go further than 10, but 10 works for the most part. 5 usually is not enough. And you're not incrementally thinking out. That's what you do if you're strategic planning. This is different than doing strategic planning. It's different because what you're doing is providing a context, a kind of framing of the future. And then within that, you do your strategic planning. So I'm not saying you spend all your time future back. We've got to spend time in the present and we still have to make choices. But the future back lens gives you a kind of up on everybody else because most people don't do it. And most people are just stuck in this really noisy now.
Yeah, I agree. It's such an interesting approach, not just for HR leaders, but business leaders to think, hey, what does my business look like in 10 years? What does my career look like in 10 years? What skills would I have to have? I think the future back is a great approach. We should leverage more. And when you think about it currently, you're right. It's very noisy. Some people would say it's really VUCA-like, and something you came up with, I believe, or really popularized in the first Leaders Make the Future, and VUCA stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. But yet you and a colleague have now labeled this as BONI, which is brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible, which, wow, that is another level on top of VUCA when you talk about this BONI. But talk more about what that is, what BONI is, and why it's so different from VUCA.
This is a big shift from the second edition, which was done in 2012, to the third edition, 2025. So the VUCA world, that was coined at the Army War College, where I now teach. I teach the new three-star generals on their first week in Washington. I've got another group of them next Monday. That was a good way of framing the future in the post-9/11 world. It is volatile. It is uncertain. It is complex. It is ambiguous. And that's still true. But it turns out if you think 10 years ahead from now, out to 2035, if you think 10 years ahead from now, VUCA isn't VUCA enough. It's going to be much more chaotic. So Jamais, my colleague, has coined this term BONI future for brittle. And in a brittle world, systems look strong until they break. And they don't just break, they shatter. They shatter. So brittle is a very real challenge. In an anxiety period, it's anxious for everybody, especially for young people, but it's anxious for everybody. So you've got to be attentive to that in ways we've never had to be before. Nonlinear, we're seeing change now that is just not happening in the way we're expecting it to happen. We have to teach our brains new tricks. We have to think future back. We have to essentially be improv people because you can't just plan and predict in the way we might have been able to do in more predictable times. And then finally, some of the complexity of these issues, particularly things around climate or global connectivity, those issues are now so complicated, we really can't comprehend them in the normal ways. We need to interconnect with different ways of thinking and thinking beyond the categories of the past to try to describe this truly chaotic future where we have to not only have a language to talk about it, and I think BONI is the best language now, but then we have to have a way to thrive, not just to survive.
Yeah, I think that's the main point. We've all survived VUCA for the last 10 years or more. Now we have to figure out how we survive kind of this BONI environment. But you're right, and I think it does really resonate with this anxiety we have around AI. This AI is incomprehensible. We don't really understand how it all works. It's very much magic for a lot of people, and that's great tech. And I think, Jeremy, that's why you've compared this generative AI era to a time of early flight with the Wright brothers, which I think is just brilliant. But talk to more about the parallels you see between those two revolutionary periods of time, flight and AI.
There's so much we don't understand about how generative AI works. Even the people that are creating the models don't fully understand why they're doing what we're doing, which can sound kind of scary, but this actually is not totally new with new technologies. The Wright brothers, for instance, invented human-powered flight and their colleagues and compatriots about 15 to 20 years before we invented the concept of lift, which was the first physics we had to describe why flight worked. Even though we don't understand why something works, doesn't mean that we can't do things with it, that we can't make it safe, that we can't begin to innovate on it. But you have to take the approach of getting into it and trying things and seeing how it works for yourself instead of waiting for a rigorous theoretical understanding of it. Because if you do, it'll get away from you. And it's actually not necessary to make things valuable and safe and interesting.
Yeah, so I guess what you're saying in some ways that even though today we don't exactly understand all the mechanics of generative AI and how it works so well, or maybe why you have breakthroughs, like we just had DeepSeek breakthrough on a much less costly model. And there's some theories around that. I've seen your posts on that, Jeremy, so I appreciate your thinking there. But are you thinking we'll be able to explain generative AI like we explained Lyft for flight in 10 to 20 years? We'll be able to explain it, maybe understand it better, maybe control it better. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, definitely. It's unexplained, but not unexplainable. The mechanics of generative AI models are exposed to us. They're just very complex, and they're doing something that we haven't seen before. which to me is quite exciting. And people are right to make sure that they manage the risks, but it's not a good enough reason to stop doing things with it. And it does mean that as a leader, your only option to understand it is to get involved, because there aren't experts on it and there won't be for a long time. And we're all learning together. Even the people that are making them can't be experts on them. They just haven't been around long enough. So you as a leader with this technology specifically don't have the option to sit back and wait for someone to come and explain it to you. You have to go and invent it yourself. And even if you aren't inventing it, go try it out. That's the most complete understanding that there is, and the most complete understanding that there will be for maybe a decade or so. Mm-hmm.
And what we've learned, and we talk a lot about in the book, is we don't yet have a good language to talk about this. And Jeremy, I wonder if you can go back to the flight metaphor and just talk about the dilemma that happened when people could say, well, it's sort of flying, but it's not flying like a bird. So is it really flying?
Yeah. With new things like this, we lack the language to have a conversation about it fully, and it holds us up. We get caught in these kind of useless loops around definitions. Is it reasoning? Is it intelligent? Is it thinking? It's quite obvious that it's doing that is something like thinking, that it's doing something that is like reasoning. It's also obvious that what it's doing isn't at all what a human does. What we really need is new words to describe this. If you want to tell me that a plane isn't flying because it's not flapping its wings, I'm perfectly on board with that. But we need to talk about the fact that it's up in the air. I don't know what the words are for generative AI. Maybe it's thunking or risening, or I don't really like grokking. People sometimes do that. But we do need them at some point to get into talking about what does it do instead of what doesn't it do.
And there's a trap here that's even worse than what Jeremy says, in the sense that we not only don't have language, what we have is bad language. And the term artificial intelligence is the worst term to describe an emerging technology I've ever studied. And I've been doing this a long time. The term was coined in 1956. So it's taken this long to be an overnight success. And we're still using it, even though it's a really bad term. So generative AI is better. Augmented intelligence is better. And by augmentation, we refer back to Doug Engelbart, the guy who coined that term way back in the late 60s. And Doug was arguing that augmented intelligence was better than artificial intelligence because it framed what the activity is better. It was open and based in the human experience instead of pretending that it's an artificial human, a kind of maybe human. It's building on the augmentation, which is the enhancement or the extension, but the human's in the center. And that's where part of what we tried to do in our book is help people develop ways of framing this future without limiting it by the categories of the past.
The language, it's so interesting you're talking about the language around this and how it frames our mind and the mental models. And I think it's really important the way you guys are describing this and talking about it. And the plane analogy it really resonates with me. And thanks, Bob, for sharing that artificial intelligence maybe is not the right way. One of the biggest challenges we have with AI is that as humans, we have a hard time keeping multiple concepts in our brain. I mean, yes. The idea of and or, people really have this or mentality versus and or both. So it's just challenging for humans. But Gabe, I know you are the scalable foresight expert on this team and one who's been thinking a lot about and hearing a lot about how AI can potentially dehumanize leadership, but yet you think there's an opposite. There's an opportunity to really rehumanize leadership. And you see a future where augmented generative AI is helping us to have much more of an optimistic perspective of the future of leadership. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, JP, that's a great question. I think the optimism comes from the field that we're in, which is thinking about the future. Bob said this earlier, and just to reiterate, futures thinking isn't about predicting where we're going. If you're trying to predict, you can get to very scary possible dehumanization futures as you look to AI and generative AI. But when you do future forecasting, painting various possibilities and thinking 10 years out, you're able to see some of the pitfalls, some of the ugliness of where this technology could lead. But you're also able to look at the amazing opportunities, the amazing possibilities. And that is the value of futures thinking, is saying, we've given ourselves 10 years to run away from futures that we think are going to be disastrous and run towards futures that we think will be beneficial. And so the optimism comes from saying, we're not extremely concerned with the here and now and the noise and the arguments and the experts that disagree and some of the fuzziness and the not knowing where AI is. But looking out towards the future, you see a clarity of what's possible. And so I think that's where the optimism comes in from. And what we're trying to get people on board with is saying, we have 10 years to make the future what we want it to be.
Yeah, I think that's right. The future is what we decide it is going to be, right? If we work towards that. Bob, in the book, you talk about, you guys outline, all three of you outline 10 leadership skills that we need to thrive in the future. And I think these were awesome. I wish we had time to go through all 10, but you need to read the book and buy the book to get those all 10. But maybe, Bob, in Jeremy and Gabe, talk about 2 to 3 skills that you think we should be focusing on in the future and why and how they'll develop over the next 10 years.
So why don't I bracket the 10 and then Gabe build from that and Jeremy bring it together. But to bracket it, the first leadership skill that we talk about is augmented future back curiosity. If you don't have curiosity, you're out of this game. You've got to be curious to be motivated to think about the future, to think differently, to stretch your own thinking. And that word stretch, we keep coming back to it. The nickname I've given my little chatbot here next to me is Stretch, because that's what generative AI does really well, stretch your thinking. So in the third edition of Leaders Make the Future, we begin with augmented future back curiosity. Then the 10th skill is the only one that we don't lead with the word augmented, and it's called human calming, because we've realized here that as you look at a technology as complicated, as mysterious, as even magical as generative AI, as you think about that kind of tech, you've got to think, what is your intention with this? How do you discern your choices? And then how do you control yourself internally? So you need to go inside yourself, calm yourself. Ultimately, that's the innately human ability that we all have to begin to make sense of all this stuff. So the bracketing of these 10 is beginning with curiosity, but at the end, coming back to calming. Maybe, Gabe, you can pick up on clarity and dilemma flipping then.
The skill that I identify just personally and professionally is that of augmented clarity, really going towards leaders and saying you have to lean into your clarity. And generative AI is a wonderful tool to help you do that, to help you strive away, kind of step away from certainty. We want certainty. As we mentioned early on in what was the VUCA and what is now the Bonnie future, the Bonnie world, the context of the world doesn't allow us to have certainty, at least not for very long. And there are very traditional roles, especially in organizations, I'm thinking of legal and compliance, HR, where we want certainty. We go to our legal and our HR leaders and say, give me the certainty, but increasingly into the future, there's less certainty. And what we have to do is lean into our clarity, asking ourselves, where do we want to be in the future? What is the purpose of our organization? What is the purpose of our role? And being very clear about the end goal, but very flexible in execution, letting go of the certainty. And so augmented clarity is leaning into that in order to be able to thrive in this brittle, anxious, nonlinear, incomprehensible future. You're better off being clear rather than being certain.
Clarity, is it part around a leadership purpose, a philosophy, or where the organization wants to go? So is what you're really talking about, Gabe?
Yeah, absolutely, JP. And I think there's a very poignant example that we can talk about here that relates to HR, right? I mean, there's all this discussion here and now about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's very easy to get into a confrontational conversation about where that future should lead. We've been talking about DEI using a future-backed perspective of being purposefully different, gathering teams and gathering colleagues and coworkers and compatriots that you can work with that are purposefully different, that bring something different to the table because that's how you advance. That's how you make progress. That's how you move forward. And you're not stuck in the same old way as bringing together a group of people that are purposefully different. So if you're clear about how do we build an organization? How do we build a team? How do we build a community that is purposefully different in helping us achieve our ultimate goal? We step away from the politicalness or the short-sightedness or the controversy of something like DEI, right? Mm-hmm. That's the clarity versus certainty that we're talking about. And a lot of organizations today are frozen. They don't know what to do. They know that one side is saying one thing and the other side is saying another. And it seems to be very paralyzing. But if you lean into that clarity, it's much easier to navigate mm-hmm. those choppy waters.
And Gabe, that really links to two of the other skills, augmented depolarization and augmented commons creation. So just to use that example of DEI, right now, the language is so polarized. And what we found as futurists is if you have to be very careful about the language you use to describe the future. If you get your language right, it draws you toward the future. If you get your language wrong, you fight the future. I mentioned earlier artificial intelligence. That was the wrong way of framing. It led to lots of simplistic sorts of science fiction about computers taking over the world and all that, which are not irrelevant. That's one scenario, but it was just a bad or at least a limited framing. DEI right now is not a good framing for the future because it's so polarized. So you need different language. A language like belonging, for example, might be a better term to frame the conversation, or purposely different, as Gabe was mentioning. But if you think about the future, again, future back, if you think about life and society and organizations, they're going to be diverse whether we want to be or not. It really isn't a question. The demography with things like intermarriage, the demography says we will be diverse. So the really question from a human resource point of view is, do we want to prepare for that or not? So if you want to prepare for that, then you've got to say, well, what do we have in common? What do we know we need? Well, we need to work together. So come up with language that describes that in a way that doesn't polarize, that doesn't categorize by the labels of the past, but define in terms of your clarity for the future.
Yeah, I think the way you said that, Gabe, purposely different. And Bob, thank you for kind of underlining and putting an exclamation point on this. The language really has a big impact, and we've got to be thoughtful about that. As you were talking about these different 10 skills, the language probably feels a little bit out there to our listeners.
Yeah.
But what I would say is when you pick the book up, the explanations are very clear.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Bob, Jeremy, and Gabe. Since I've doubled down on my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders, I've been asked to be a keynote speaker for 7 different internal HR conferences or career weeks of Fortune 500 companies. This has been a big honor and a blast. What am I speaking on? Well, I'm leveraging my 100-plus interviews on the podcast and my 20-plus year career as a talent and HR executive to talk about 3 things. 1, how HR leaders can have more influence and impact in what I call the influence equation. 2, how to future-proof your HR career in the age of AI. And 3, the future trends impacting our field. I love speaking to HR teams and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities that I've had to date. If you're looking for a speaker for your 2025 HR conferences, career weeks, or other meetings, I'd love to hear from you and talk.
But Jeremy, I do want to get your perspective on where we're going in terms of these 10 leadership skills. Which one resonates for you or think is most critical?
For leaders using generative tools, there's a couple of things you want to think about that connect to what Bob and Gabe were saying around how you make decisions as a leader, how you learn as a leader, and how you communicate as a leader. With the idea of augmented depolarizing, as a leader, you have to communicate with lots of different kinds of people. If you want to create a system that reaches people in exactly the way that you talk, you can. But you could also think about how do I create a system that reaches people in the way that they talk. If you're thinking about talent acquisition, it's nice to talk about reaching different kinds of talent or people from different cultures or speaking with people that are different from yourself, but it can be quite difficult because at the end of the day, you have 10,000 applications and only so much time. Created badly, these systems can reinforce a lot of things that won't provide value to the organization, that simply build on heuristics and shortcuts that the organization already uses. But used properly, they could look past some of the things in, let's say, an application that normally might throw someone out. It's worded differently. It uses kind of different phrasing. Someone might scan that and say, oh, this doesn't seem quite right. Used correctly, you can build a system that actually looks at what are the skills of this person? What is the experience that they have? And are they actually a better fit for the job than this person that has the checkmark credentials that we're accustomed to looking for? It's about how do you use these to get arbitrage for your organization? How do you use less resources in your organization to reach better people, even when they don't look immediately the way that you might think? You also have the capability to confirm what you already think with incredible power now. If you are a leader who wants to keep thinking the way that they're thinking and not have any new ideas, you have amazing systems already in 2025 to create long, detailed essays about how you're so very smart and how your decisions are the best and most correct you could possibly get. The same exact system can question your thinking and can help you find your own blind spots. And no one can make a leader high enough up in an organization do one or the other. It's really up to them and how they choose to use the tool and to build the tool. It's a hard decision that leaders have to make and an intention that they have to set when they're using these tools to seek out blind spots, new ideas, and ways in which they might be wrong, and to reach past where they're at, to communicate with people differently, as opposed to the opposite. And both are available to them. But if they do the latter, they'll get a lot more value for their company.
Jeremy, I wonder if you could take us then from where you are now to the most exotic of the skills, the augmented smart mob swarming, and what that's likely to look like.
We started writing this book a year ago. And at the time, there was, now in 2025, agents are becoming more popular. And we could see that when the book was coming out, agents were just going to start getting good. We had to write not only 10 years out, but also 1.5 years out. But on a 10-year timeline, it's not going to be about individual agents. Right now, what's just emerging is an agent that interacts with you personally, that does your personal tasks. But in 10 years, it's not going to be just one-to-one. It's going to be groups of people and groups of agents swarming together and guiding each other. This connects to what Bob calls shape-shifting organizations. Hierarchy in organizations is going to be very fluid because different kinds of people are going to be able to get the resources and information that they need when they need it through these agentic swarms in order to take on leadership that they couldn't before. Bob, maybe you want to speak more to shape-shifting organizations and how that connects to this.
It essentially means that things are fluid. Hierarchy does not go away. There's still leaders, but they're fluid. They change, and it's kind of who's in the best position to make which decision at what time. And shape-shifting organizations just get much better at doing that. But the wild card here is that now these organizations have non-human participants, including non-human participants in meetings. And that creates this concept of swarms. And the swarm isn't just humans or isn't just agents. It's really blended organizations that include human and non-human participants.
Yeah, I think everyone just stopped and basically paused the podcast and said, I need to take a break here and think about what's going to happen. Going back to Bonnie, this starts becoming a little bit nonlinear and incomprehensible to think about the way we're going to operate. As a challenge a little bit thinking about this, I agree. I mean, where agents are going, I think Jensen Huang at NVIDIA just talked about how he thinks agents will sort of take over and actually proposed that IT might be the new HR, managing these swarms of agents. I'm wondering, you talk about power and hierarchy. One of the things that's persisted over time is that the fearless leader, not giving up power. AI has the capability. I just read a study that in terms of they turned AI across the supply chain looking for efficiencies. And all of a sudden, you're right, the org structure went away because AI doesn't care about org structure. It looked at cost efficiencies across many different departments, functions. And it was like, well, now who gets to make the decision on that? And we're so tied to having leaders. How do you think organizations will really respond to this? I don't know if leaders humanistically will want to give up this power.
I think this is an opportunity for human resource organizations, not just a threat. It is a threat if you don't respond well, but it's an opportunity. And the opportunity is these Gen AI technologies and these swarms that we're creating. The challenge is not just the technology. The challenge is how we use the technology. And that's really difficult. So the line we use is that generative AI comes to life in conversation. So it isn't like a separate technology that you evaluate. It comes to life in conversation. Now, human resource people and organizational people, we understand more about dialogue, more about the human side, more about how humans actually make choices, how they discern, how they control and moderate their own behavior. That's really the challenge of Gen AI, just as much as the tech. So this is, to me, a historic opportunity for human resources to get engaged with generative AI to help to shape what does an augmented human look like? What does an augmented organization look like? And there have been chances in the past that human resources organizations have had, but they haven't gone ahead to embrace the technology. I hope this time human resources organizations will embrace Gen AI and help make smart decisions about how humans decide to become enhanced, how humans decide to become augmented. And those human, those organizational, those psychological choices, those are the most difficult choices right now. It isn't just the tech, the human resources, people and organizations, you're really needed in this space.
Yeah, I agree. I think HR really has to be at the forefront. This cannot be an IT-driven initiative.
Yes.
Or anywhere else. We have to help because it's changing how we work, how we're structured, how we lead. All those things will shift, especially if the future comes to pass, as you guys talk about with swarming of AI agents, which we're right there. I do want to talk maybe a couple different opportunities here where we see AI helping us to be better. One of the things you talk about in the book is take a dilemma and make it into an opportunity, helping leaders solve different problems. How do you see AI helping leaders kind of flip a challenge into an opportunity? Since we're moving into a world that's going to be nonlinear and incomprehensible, there'll be lots of opportunities or dilemmas. How does AI start to do that?
It's important to distinguish here the difference between a problem and a dilemma. And the way that we talk about it in the book is a problem has a solution. A problem has an answer. A dilemma does not have a clear solution. There's no clear answer. You have to approach a problem with saying, I can't solve it, but I can make the situation better. A dilemma allows you to make a decision that can either make the situation better or make it much worse. Where generative AI plays a role in this kind of dilemma flipping is helping you assess your options, helping you understand and maybe uncover. You think there's two options, two ways forward, and generative AI may actually reveal that there's maybe three additional options that you hadn't considered. This is where Bob talks about generative AI really shines in conversation. A lot of us today, I've seen this with my friends, I've seen this with colleagues, I've seen this with partners and clients, where they're using generative AI as a search engine, as a, here's the problem, what's the answer? And we've seen time and again how generative AI is not built to solve problems. It really is built to pull out different angles and different ideas and different viewpoints in dilemmas. Tie that in with the 10-year long view, with the future back view of giving yourself 10 years. And leaders are in a prime position to step away from trying to solve something that isn't solvable, but they've given themselves enough runway to lean towards decisions that are going to be make the situation a lot better and not a lot worse into the future. So that's where we talk about kind of the opportunity of flipping dilemmas into something positive.
That's helpful context on a dilemma versus a problem, helping to understand how AI is really about helping us think differently and be a thought partner. And Jeremy, you talked about this a little bit, but you think that generative AI will help leaders to fail fast, fail early, and fail cheaply. How is generative AI going to change the way leaders learn from failure?
We hear a lot of conversation about people trying to remove hallucination from generative systems. For me, the hallucination is the point. The fact that they can come up with new stories, that they can come up with things that haven't existed yet, new ideas, that's the only thing that generative systems do that old computing paradigms didn't do. something that emerges out of that is that they can create highly realistic simulations. Something that I've seen some of the leaders that we're working with start to do is use even the chatbots we have today to simulate tough conversations that they're going to have. If they have a negotiation or they have a performance review that is where they're giving some feedback, using it to, in a very highly realistic way, simulate the conversation that they'll have so they go into that more prepared. You could think about using that for business strategy and scenario planning as well. This allows you to try out a lot of different versions of ideas and see where they might go and create strategic foresight stories on a 10-year, 5-year, 3-year timeline to understand what the potential outcomes might be in order to make your thinking broader than it might be and more innovative than it might be otherwise. But I think what's important right now is to make sure that this happens in a collective way. It's really important right now when you're thinking about how does your organization use generative systems to make sure that there are yes zones as well as no zones. Lots of people are working on their generative AI policy, and they usually are a list of no's. Don't put in personally identifiable information. Make sure you don't put any IP in there. Make sure you don't post any of this publicly. And because it's not people's job to use it, and they already have a way of doing their job that doesn't involve it, they say, well, I'm just not going to use it because it sounds risky. And this is a list of ways that I can get in trouble. That's important. I don't mean to say that the risks are unimportant. They are very important. Things can really go wrong with this stuff. But you also have to say, also, do use it in this way. Do it here and share how you're using it. And when you do, we're going to give you a certificate for helping us learn together. Because otherwise, you're going to get shadow IT, you know, the way that we did with social media, where people are going to start using it, but they're going to use it secretly, which, yes, increases your risk, but mostly decreases your upside. Because you don't get to learn together as an organization in order to invent how you can particularly use this in the best way possible. So by creating those yes zones, you ensure that that happens. And you cut down on the pain of that incomprehensibility by collectively learning as an organization.
And here, Jeremy, just to build on that, here it's so important as you're trying to moderate the challenges, the things that could be illegal or unethical about generative AI, and there's quite a few of those. There's this language being used to describe it now saying, oh, we've got to create guardrails. And we suggest in the book that it's too early to create guardrails because we don't yet know what the technology is. So almost certainly these guardrails that are created by government, by uninformed elected officials, or by well-intentioned people that just don't understand the technology yet, because nobody understands the technology yet. If you create guardrails, you'll almost certainly have unintended consequences, some of which could be really bad. So the metaphor we use is bounce ropes. You got to create bounce ropes, kind of like a boxing ring or a wrestling ring, where the ropes clearly keep the wrestlers in the ring. So you need things that keep you in the ethical range, keep you in the legal range, but they also have to be flexible because we don't yet know what the technology is. So the challenge here, and this is where the leadership skill we talk about, is augmented immersive learning. How can you create scenarios that test what kind of bounce ropes you need, what kind of skills you need? But Jeremy's point is so important about this. It isn't an option to just walk away from this. It isn't an option just to identify the no zones. If you're not embracing this technology and learning what it's good for and what it's bad for, 10 years from now, you're out of the game. You're out of the game. It's that fundamental. It's that fundamental.
And when you say we're out of the game, do you mean companies that don't embrace AI, or do you think, is it people as well?
People as well, definitely. People as well. Yeah, and this is the time where you have to be experimenting with it, learning to use it, and the human skills in using it. That's the really important zone, and that's the zone that the human resource people can contribute so much to. Don't leave this up to the tech people. It's not just a tech issue.
We don't yet understand this technology. Is there, looking back in our short history here of technology, what are the other parallels where we didn't understand the technology?
My very first professional paper, I just finished my PhD at Northwestern. My very first professional paper was at the conference where the internet was introduced publicly. And it was called the ARPANET originally, and it was secret classified technology. And then it became public about 4 years. And I was there for that very first, that was my first paper. So the internet in those days was this kind of technology. And I think generative AI is of a comparable scale, but it's even more challenging because the internet was essentially a tool for connecting, So when we did the second edition of Leaders Make the Future, the cover image was a real internet traffic diagram created by a graduate student at Carnegie Mellon. And the challenge was, how do leaders connect? Connect to their organizations, connect to people through virtual media, through the internet, through electronic media. It was really a challenge of connectivity. Now, 12 years later, 2025, the cover of our new third edition is created by Jeremy and our publisher, contains real AI-generated art. And the challenge is, how do we want to be augmented as leaders? And we have the choice, and I think the human resource organizations ought to be right in the center of that choice. How do you want to be augmented? You should all be asking that. We should all be asking that. How do we want to be augmented? That's much more profound. So generative AI, I think, in terms of impact, it's on the scale of the impact that the internet had on society and organizations. But it's even more complicated because with the internet, all we were talking about was connectivity. And originally it was data connectivity, then it was people, now it's machines and IT, like the Internet of Things, but it was all about connectivity. Now, generative AI is playing with our brains. It's playing with our brains. And it gives us a chance to reimagine ourselves as humans, as augmented humans.
Yeah, I think it's so powerful. The other book I'd recommend is Ray Kurzweil's Singularity Is Near. I know it's an advanced book, but I learned a lot.
A quick caveat, that book, which I think is terrific, and it's really a stretch, but he's talking about a singularity. We're not going that far. We're talking about a blend of human and machine where the human's still in charge, where it's not a complete singularity. I don't believe myself that that's where we're going to go ultimately, but it is a question of belief. And Kurzweil may be right. He's a brilliant guy, and it's an amazing book. What we're talking about in our book is that augmentation of the human. It's not a singularity. It's a blend of the human augmented by generative AI.
And I think, as you said, it's a choice. We have to make a choice around the future we want. How augmented do we want to be? And I think I do recommend that book just because it does a great job of explaining AI and the history of AI. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think it paints multiple visions of future that possibly could happen. The one quote in the book, it just resonated with me, and I want people to hear this, and I want them to read the book, of course. But the quote was, change isn't a force to resist, but a reality to harness. And I feel like I need that on my coffee mug or a t-shirt, or at least a post note on my computer, because change isn't a force to resist, but a reality to harness. Tell us more about why you said that and how this matters and why it matters for leaders.
I just want to jump in here. I can't credit myself with coming up with that brilliant line, but I think I can credit myself with the inspiration for that line in the book, and I'll explain why. Amongst the three authors here, I am known as a resident skeptic. When Bob and Jeremy first had this idea, they approached me and they said, we want you to join us on this journey. We're about to write on this book. I agreed to do it, but with the caveat that they allowed me to slow down the process and to ask hard questions, because since day one, I've been a skeptic of this. Not that I think that this is going to go away or that this is going to fail or anything like that, but a skeptic in terms of, we have a long history of amazing technology, amazing platforms, amazing kind of new abilities. We've implemented them in a not kind of very humanistic way. We always allow, a lot of the times, we allow the same communities to kind of not benefit from them and almost work to their detriment. I, at the very beginning, was very resistant to generative AI and even wanting to talk about and interfacing with generative AI platforms. And I think as we had these discussions and as we had these debates and we had these moments to pause, it was really stepping away, at least for myself personally, from trying to resist this scary kind of dark topic that I knew very little about, and embracing the change and kind of riding the change and learning from Jeremy and learning from Bob and hopefully teaching them also and bringing new perspectives to the table. But I will say that's kind of the journey that I went on. And Bob, Jeremy, I know that quote probably means something different for you.
It's interesting writing a book with three co-authors. My goal when I write books with others is that I don't remember who wrote what. And I'm glad you asked this because I don't remember literally who wrote that. Could have been Stretch, but I don't think so. The point of it is that we have this tendency in this very noisy, this very polarized time, when we're confronted with something new, we either resist it or we choose sides. And what we're suggesting is you should do neither. You should think future back about that and say, what's going on here? And listen for the future before you act. But Jeremy, I'd love to get your reaction.
When I think about augmented future back curiosity, this connects very deeply for me. When something new emerges, we can't foresee the unintended consequences. When the United States opened up GPS for the world to use in technical systems, certainly they foresaw that it would change the way people navigated. I'm sure they weren't thinking that it was going to transform dating. We don't know what the second order consequences of this will be, and that's a good thing. There's mathematical algorithmic principles that show certain problems can't be solved except through novelty seeking. The work from Jeff Kloon and others around DeepMind and previously Uber is really important for this, that if we in the 1900s had only been aiming towards increasing computation, we would have gotten really, really good radios and abacuses. But you couldn't get there linearly. It was the radio that led to the digital computer, and then that led us to AI. So exploring and doing things in an open-ended way and embracing that change and embracing that unpredictability is not just a nice thing to say. It actually leads to a lot of innovative value. And it also, I think, connects to how we organize in companies and in organizations. Our friends in the defense world have rather long ago left aside the command and control paradigm because it just doesn't work. Things that communicate commanders' intent, that accommodate the idea that there will be change and focus on getting people on the ground, the resources they need to address things where they are, is a better way to organize. So that's another way of embracing change that I think is important.
It is. And the interesting thing about that in a Bonnie world is what the military calls commander's intent or mission command, this idea of being very clear about direction, very flexible about execution, as Gabe was mentioning, with augmented clarity. That kind of model, commander's intent, mission command, it only works if you've got a commander in chief, a top leader who's clear. If the commander in chief is not clear or not truthful or not trustworthy, the system breaks down.
Thanks, Bob. And thank you for all three of you talking about that quote. I think it's a powerful quote. And for me, I feel more optimistic about the future when I think about we have agency to build this future that we want in a very positive way. Leverage this technology because it is amazing. It does amazing things. It can be so helpful. I want to finish with the last question I ask all my guests. This one, Bob, I think it's pretty exciting to have a futurist of your caliber. And that question is, what is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
The one word would be alchemy. Alchemy. There is a science associated with this. There is a technology associated with this. And there is a magic. There's a magic associated with this. Again, as futurists, we know that if you get your language right, it draws you toward the future. If you get your language wrong, you fight the future. So I'm resisting mechanical metaphors. I want to bring in a more organic metaphor, but I also want to bring in a bit of magic. I want to re-enchant the conversation.
That's good. That's tough to follow. Gabe, how about you?
lean into the spirit of what the three of us have done. The three of us, there are a lot of differences in our way of thinking, in a way of approaching this topic, a way of communicating this. And that was purposeful. That wasn't accidental. I really do have to credit Bob and Jeremy to agree to keep me on this project, knowing that I would slow the process down. I think it speaks to their character and to their passion for really finding the clarity in this future. And I think HR needs to lean into that, of being looking for colleagues that are purposefully different, looking for colleagues that are interested in the pursuit of clarity rather than the pursuit of certainty. Take that for what it's worth. Go out and build teams, build organizations that are going to challenge, but challenge us productively to get us to clarity and not certainty.
Jeremy?
A lot of people in the next 10 years with generative AI are going to try and take human resources and drop the human and keep the resources. You'll win the more that you emphasize the human and use the resources to emphasize the humanness of your organization.
Great. Well said. Well, alchemy, having that diversity of thought, diversity of purpose, I'm saying that properly, I think, Gabe, and the idea that keeping human at the forefront and not resources. This has been a great conversation. Leaders Make the Future, third edition. I cannot wait for everyone to read this and for this podcast to be out. Thank you all three for being on the Future of HR podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Bob, Jeremy, and Gabe for sharing their future back vision for how we can humanize leadership with generative AI. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person, as this really helps us to grow the podcast and helps the mission of inspiring and developing the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Sabina Nawaz, who's an elite executive coach who advises C-level executives and teams, and the author of a terrific new book, You're the Boss, Becoming the Manager You Want to Be and Others Need. This conversation with Sabina was filled with tangible, practical advice that'll help you to be a better leader and coach, and help you coach your leaders to be a better boss as well. This is a great conversation and one you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.